Welcome to the Armchair Superstar Podcast. On today's show, the Oscars. What is the purpose of government and who is the man? Stick around. Hello everyone, this is Drew Bauer, the Armchair Superstar. Sorry I'm getting this episode out a day late. Wasn't really in the mood yesterday on Monday. I was a bit hungover and a bit down on myself. But hopefully I'll make up for it today. Oscars were Sunday night, hosted by Ellen DeGeneres. I think she did an okay job. They're really trying to do a lot of things that are going to make it such a less stuffy event, I think. She did a lot of things, a lot of interaction with the audience, like ordered pizza and did the, they crashed Twitter with the selfie, all that other blah, blah, blah crap. Okay, so Ellen did whatever. The awards, not surprising, Gravity took home pretty much anything technical. I was getting kind of tired of it at some point. The Great Gatsby won best set design, I believe, and I didn't see The Great Gatsby, had no desire to, but I was so excited that something other than Gravity was called that I was like, yeah, hell yeah, Great Gatsby, which will never ever come out of my mouth ever again. But took home all the technical awards, took home best director. I was getting upset. Usually best director, best picture tied with each other. But that didn't happen this time. Really glad 12 Years a Slave won best picture. Very deserving film. If you haven't seen it, please do. I mean, I didn't walk out with an overabundance of white guilt. I just thought it was a moving story. Very, very well performed. Very well shot movie. Check it out if you have the opportunity. It should be coming out here sometime soon. The thing about Gravity, going back to Gravity, I thought it was interesting. Gravity just came out to own or rent like a week ago, I think. And it seemed like there was this huge push for this film concerning the awards. It was made by Miramax, however, distributed by Warner Brothers. It's really a Warner Brothers property. And when they did that tribute to a hero's journey or whatever, it was this huge montage of stuff about the hero. They spent a lot. There was a lot of clips of Harry Potter, a lot of clips of other Warner Brothers properties. So I don't know. I think maybe Warner Brothers tried to buy this one out. I don't know. But they didn't win Best Picture. A couple interesting things of note. Cate Blanchett won Best Actress for Blue Jasmine. She came up. I want to preface this by saying that I like Cate Blanchett. I think she's a great actress. Blah-de-da-de-da. She comes out and says that people feel down, or people feel that women-centered films are a niche market, and that there's some kind of no place. But she wanted to make a point to say that they do well, and that they make money. Very interesting to me. I can't disagree, although Blue Jasmine was in theater for like a minute. Usually those films, the women-centered ones, they're usually not movies that a lot of money is put into them. They're usually very personal, very small. I don't mean that just in a budget sense. They're not a broad ranging film as far as locations and effects and all this other stuff. They keep the film very focused on the character in and of itself, and therefore they don't have to spend a lot of money on it, and it's very easy to make money in that regard. However, she's acting in this film, you know, written by Woody Allen, really like rich for performances and stuff, and she did a great job. Again, I'm not saying I'm down on women-centered films. Saying that they're worth anything less than male-driven ones, they do make money because not a lot of money is put into them. And if you have a performer like Cate Blanchett, word of mouth alone is going to give that the push that it needs for people to go out and see it. Blue Jasmine, like I said, not in theaters for a very long time, but it found its market, and it had to be a very small one. And then on, you know, to rent or to buy. So I guess was a try to be a point made. I don't think that anyone was really down on, at least I had never heard of anything about how that's some kind of niche or genre on its own of being a woman's drama. I think if it's worth it, no matter who it's following, it's good enough and should make money on its own right. Matthew McConaughey wins Best Actor, Dallas Buyers Club. Just the transformation he had to go through to do this role, losing all this weight and then taking on a role that presents himself in a very masculine way but kind of breaks him down. Very, very powerful performance. I'm not taking away from performance. Matthew McConaughey himself comes up. Now, the big thing that people have been talking about all over social media and the news is the first thing he does when he comes up, he says, I want to thank God for this. He's a person I look up to. Because I know that all the work that has been done here or for me is not been by my hand or any other human hand. And he goes out there and thanks God. Now, everybody thinks that it's just crickets when he says that he wants to thank God. It's the first thing he opens with. I think people are just trying to reach for, okay, when do I clap? Because maybe he's not done talking about this, but then he rolls on and maybe gets like a little few applause. That's what people care about. People cared about how many people were thanking God for the award. Look, you don't have to thank God if you don't believe in God or if you just want to get to the people that worked with you on the film. All of a sudden, people are thinking it's some kind of mandatory thing that you have to go and thank God. I'm not a subscriber to it. Obviously, those that know me, that I don't believe in God, so obviously I wouldn't, but even if you did, I really don't see how that's a practice of a good Christian lifestyle. Like, oh, I won this award. Oh, first and foremost, keep it to themselves. You keep it to yourselves. I don't see how it is such a huge faux pas now to either thank God or not thank God. People are complaining that maybe it's getting out of sports, getting out of the entertainment industry. Who cares? The thing that I want to focus on with Matthew McConaughey said is that his hero is himself 10 years from now. I can't imagine a more pretentious thing to say or to feel. Look, I have no problem with self-confidence. I have no problem with wanting to achieve and always striving after things. But to make that person you are looking up to or wanting to look up to yourself in this amount of time, what a douchey thing to say or to want to do. I understand where he's coming from. I understand that, hey, you always want to be feeling like, you know, it's never enough. It's never enough for you and blah, 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 blah. But it never being enough is a motivator. But also, if you don't live up to that, you're just going to feel like crap. And not to say that he needs some sports star or another great actor to look up to as a hero. You can always have heroes that are everyday people. My hero is my dad. So while I want to be as successful as my dad, I can't say it in a certain way. I can't say that I want to do the things that he's done. I just want to have a degree of success where I feel that I've done well, that I've done well by me and by my loved ones. And not measure it in an amount of dollars and cents or awards and whatnot. And maybe Matthew McConaughey feels that way too. Maybe he's not going to measure it in awards. Maybe he's not going to measure the amount of box office success he has. But the only person he's trying to reach and strive for is himself in 10 years. I don't know. Maybe I just don't view a hero as being that thing. Maybe an inspiration, not necessarily somebody you're trying to catch up with. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Another thing that I was kind of confused on was the in memoriam section before Bette Midler revealed that she was still alive and sang Wind Beneath My Wings, was that they end with Philip Seymour Hoffman. I guess he is one of the more recent beloved by the Academy folks, but I'm kind of wondering why they just jammed Peter O'Toole in the middle. You know, this was a guy who was the most nominated never to win. I think he was nominated 8 or 9 times, and they just kind of stuffed him in the middle of the in memoriam. You're like, okay, Lawrence of Arabia, who had nothing but a great career and inspired so many actors out there, kind of gets shoved in the middle. And they saved the end for Philip Seymour Hoffman, who died of a massive overdose from heroin and mixed with cocaine. So that's probably a good way to end it, sure. So I start with the Oscars as a way to talk about film to work into this this next piece here. The other day I was watching the movie Dave. The movie stars Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver is in it, Frank Langella, as you could imagine, playing the bad guy because he doesn't ever play a good guy ever in anything he's ever in. And the movie centers around the president, who's also played by Kevin Kline. He needs a double. Sometimes they're imposing this thing that sometimes the president has a double if the security situation is too grim or he's going to be exposed. So Dave, played by Kevin Kline, does a sort of impersonator type shtick as the president. Like he goes to, you know, like use car lots or other places and he poses as the president and just a way to boost sales. So the White House team finds Dave to get him to do a one-off gig. And everyone's like, oh my God, he looks just like him, blah, blah, blah. So very shortly after he does the gig, in fact, on his way home, the president suffers the stroke. And now he's going into this underground bunker hospital to lay low. And they bring Dave back because Frank Langella, again, who's the bad guy, says, no, people have to believe he's still around, he's still kicking, he's still in charge, that we can't give over this office to the vice president. And Frank Langella is really just after the presidency in this very convoluted scheme. So they bring Dave in to pretend to be the president, to go to the meetings, to do the speeches, and all that sort. And of course, the president was on the outs with his wife, and Dave's really attracted to Sigourney Weaver, who knows why. And then he starts getting it, feeling it upon himself that now he's in this position to do all he can. He challenges Frank Langella, blah. You all know how it ends. The beautiful people get together. But it's so many points in this film. There's one point where they go over the budget, and it was really hilarious. So they cut these homeless shelters in the budget because they need $650 million, and nobody seems to give a shit other than Dave and the First Lady. They're like, well, you need to find the money because blah, 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 which would not happen right now. They'll cut the military before they cut homeless shelters. So Dave gets his buddy who works in some kind of accounting firm. I can't remember what the dude does, but he comes in. They're like, take a look at this budget. And he goes, can you find $650 million? Now, if you've seen what the budget looks like now, it's hundreds, if not thousands, of pages long. And of course, it's also in like the trillions of dollars. But this was back in the 90s. So maybe it was a little bit smaller. Maybe it was only, you know, 700 to 800 or 900 pages. And he goes through the budget and he starts talking about all this stuff. And basically two guys come in and find this money in the budget. Now, it follows up with them in the cabinet. They're having a cabinet meeting and Dave says, hey, I want to address the budget. And he finds these things and attempt to save $650 million. And he brings in all these cameras to force all of these secretaries to basically do what he says, which is funny because Congress eventually has to approve the budget. The president can't come in and say, this is where the budget cuts are going to be. He can veto, sure, and he can add emphasis to where he wants money to go to, but he can't just create that. He's got to bring it back to Congress. And that would have gone to another committee, and it probably wouldn't even happen in the first place. But later on, Dave comes in, and he has a special address. It's not, I guess you could call it a State of the Union, although he wasn't doing it around the time that the president normally does, because the Constitution says every once in a while, you got to update the State of the Union. We've done it to once a year, but that I guess that frequency has been well enough for us. Then we just kind of squander around for another 6 months, and then, you know, we never really get anything in the summer. I think maybe twice a year wouldn't be too bad. But anyway, Dave calls everybody up and he says, I want the purpose of this presidency to be to find every person a job that wants a job. And that's what he's going to do. And then he wants to push for a bill and all this other stuff. And that's what really got me thinking about what people view not only the government and the legislative branch, Congress, but also the executive power and what it was founded on and what it's supposed to be and what it has become. First of all, perfect employment in the United States is 5% unemployment or less. 5% unemployment is perfect employment. Not everybody that wants a job is going to get a job. Some jobs you aren't actually qualified to have. But the idea that the government's responsibility and their duty is to make sure you are employed is one that comes back to providing for the general welfare. Or at least that's what's being argued. But how is it their job? How is it their responsibility for you to be employed, for you to get up, to go out there, to get educated or to get qualified and to go out there and work? And for that matter, do they really care what kind of job you have? Do they care if you're happy in your job? Or do they really just care that you are working so you can pay taxes? I don't know. Maybe that's a little cynical, maybe hard-hearted of me. But it just seems like if it's their responsibility to get you that job, then they're going to say it's their responsibility to have you keep that job. And it's just going to keep being more and more intrusive until all of a sudden it's their responsibility that you have a house, and it's their responsibility that you have a car, and so on and so forth. And you will have no choice but to submit to the will of this government who's saying that they're just trying to help you. We've been seeing a lot from President Obama about the use of the executive power and making executive acts in legislation. Now, the article in the Constitution that sets up the executive branch makes no real mention of that. He's the commander-in-chief of the military. And during his presidency, when he gives the State of the Union address, he is allowed to provide an emphasis to Congress when he speaks to them to say, hey, I want to see something like this. I want to see something about jobs. I want to see something about foreign policy, or I want to see something about civil rights. He can do that, and that's fine. He's allowed to push that because he is supposed to be the one person that is going to represent the voice of America in that collective good. Congress is elected by people, and they're supposed to represent people from their states on a national level. And then the president comes in and is supposed to be a figurehead of the nation. He does not run the country. He is not in charge. He is supposed to be that person that along in the checks and balances system, checks and balance the legislative branch. He's supposed to be our head diplomat to other countries, and he is supposed to be the one person that is representative to the American value, to the American spirit, so on and so forth. He is not the ruler of America. That's exactly why we had the revolution, was over a ruler of America, over imposing legislation that we didn't agree with, over imposing taxes that we didn't agree with. Overextending governmental reach is why we decided to become an independent nation in the first place. Some say it's not enough, some say it's too much. Where is the line drawn? When you come in and threaten and say, I don't need Congress to do this, I don't need Congress to do that, well, then what is the point of Congress? And this goes back even beyond Barack Obama and all the situations where military might was used in other countries without a declaration of war from Congress. Only Congress has the power to declare war, to actually declare war. By executive order, the president can send troops in, he gets a certain amount of time, and then has to come back to Congress, and Congress can keep extending. This thing that we were in Iraq and in Afghanistan was not a war. It's not to declare war. Hey! Don't blame us. We didn't send the troops there. We didn't declare war. I didn't sign a declaration of war. Did you? No. Did you? No. And he can keep passing the buck. Well, I understand this. They need the money for this, that, and the other. But we're not going to do that. We're going to decrease the military. But we're going to raise federal minimum wage. And we're going to send aid to the Ukraine. This whole situation with Ukraine, it's all coming out. And this is the kind of time when people are talking about the level of involvement that they may want the United States to go into, where they're not satisfied with the president coming out and say, we condemn your action. Well, what do you want? Do you want us to go fight with Russia? Do you want us to go fight with China? To what extent are we supposed to be outraged in a physical manner? What are we supposed to do about it? And these situations where that may be what people are advocating, sound bites are not going to provide you the most education on this subject. Just seeing these little headlines. It's the return of the USSR. Russia invades. All this invasion. And they're all of a sudden just coming into the situation and saying, hey, you people in the Ukraine couldn't get this done. That this is an opportunity for us to invade. And from what I'm seeing, no bullets have flown from the guns of the Russian military. They're not there setting fire to any houses. They're there now. Putin doesn't want anything to escalate. He wants things to settle out, but he's there as a call. Their constitution says that Russia can come in and help support them and help secure their interest. So I don't think Poland should be shaken in their boots yet. They're not a threat to our national security, so let's hold off on advocating us stepping in there with our boys and girls in blue. So just hold up on that. Now, as I wrap up the show today on the Who is the Man segment, it was going to be the one from last week, but Harold Ramis just died, and I wanted to do a little piece about Harold Ramis at the time. So last week's is now this week's Who is the Man goes to a musician, a director, and from all accounts, just a nice guy in the business, Dave Grohl. Obviously, it doesn't surprise a lot of people that know me. I am a huge Foo Fighters fan, was a huge Nirvana fan, loved the stuff he did with Queens of the Stone Age, Probot. He just worked on an EP with Zac Brown Band. If you guys haven't heard it, it's called The Grohl Sessions, Zac Brown Band. Awesome. He was very, very young when he got in the business. I think he was 14, lied to the first band he was with, said he was 16 or 18. Everybody knows him, first off, from drumming in Nirvana. Really brought the band to the next level. Guys like Chris Novoselic and a lot of biographers around the band thought that if he hadn't come and joined the band and did what he did, they just would have been in indie label squalor as opposed to the giant success that they became. Not to take anything away, obviously, from Kurt Cobain or Chris Novoselic for that matter, but he just kicked the music up a notch to something that drummers, when they start playing rock and roll now, the new drummers, I mean, they all pray to the altar of that is Dave Grohl. After Kurt Cobain died, he did a lot of gigs and recordings with other bands, and then he was Foo Fighters. That first album that came out, short of a few people coming in to guest play, he did everything. He did drums, he did bass, he did guitar, and he wrote all the songs. And Foo Fighters have become a huge success in their own right, not just because of trading off the name that is Dave Grohl and he was in Nirvana. He honestly attempted to hide that part so people would just take this band off of what they heard, not from what they knew about the man behind it. So Foo Fighters, amazing band, put out a bunch of albums, a bunch of Grammys, which Grammys don't mean shit, but a rock band that is so well-respected, and I'm not going to say for the same way, like U2 is always, they're going to be known as that band that goes out and feeds the hungry and visits the starving kids and all that other stuff, and that's one aspect of why they are so respected. The other thing that the Foo Fighters do, they love music so much, and they love their fans, constantly doing fan contests where they get to interact. This last album they came out with, Wasting Light, was recorded in Dave's garage. So they decided to have a contest, and the six people that won had Foo Fighters come and do a show in their garage. Six shows, six garages, the greatest band in the world coming to play. Such a great coup to the fan base out there. A couple of albums ago, they reached out on YouTube and they said, hey, if you play an instrument that's not drums or bass guitar, because we play that, but if you play the violin or the clarinet or the oboe or any of these instruments, record yourself playing the Pretender. And then we're going to select whoever wins. They had a giant orchestra of just fans or people just trying to get on TV that submitted videos and got a chance to play at the Grammys and play with them at the Grammys. They're always going out there and doing stuff like that for the people that come and support them at their shows. Dave Grohl specifically, he's done things. He's directed a lot of Foo Fighter videos. He's gone and played drums for bands like Queens of the Stone Age, as I mentioned, The Killing Joke. He did the Tenacious D albums. He was in Pick of Destiny, the movie, as well. He likes to get out there and he likes to do other things besides stay in his little circle that is Foo Fighters. He's out there making friends with all these musicians and they want him to play. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want Dave Grohl to play drums or sing on your album? He made this film, Sound City, if you guys haven't seen it. It's a great documentary about the Sound City recording studio and mostly the mixing board that was made for it. After the whole thing shut down, he bought that board and he took it to his garage, made Studio 606, and that's what they recorded Wasting Light on. They also recorded another album with all those heroes from Sound City. It's a great documentary. If you have a chance to watch it, it's really awesome. A lot of legendary musicians talking about their recording experience in that. But it's just another great thing that Dave Grohl does. And along with making great music and making film or video, he just likes to go out there and do everything he can because he feels so lucky to do it. And if I ever get the chance to meet him, I'm not usually, I've met a few celebrities in my life and you just kind of like, okay, it's nice to meet you, because I don't want them to believe that I think they're above human. But Dave Grohl is probably one of those people that I'm going to wet my pants to. So getting a Foo Fighters song, I'm going to end the show here with a Foo song. But I didn't want one that everybody knew. I didn't want to pick Everlong, although it's an amazing song and my favorite. I didn't want, you know, Times Like These and, you know, stuff that people knew. So if you were on the fence or didn't like Foo Fighters or whatever, I picked a really good rock song, a really good song of theirs. This is a song that starts out their third album, There Is Nothing Left to Lose. They always know how to kick off an album. So I'm going to leave you with this. If you have any comments or questions or gripes, bitches, moans, and anything like that, email me, armchairsuperstar@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you guys this next week. So I'm going to leave you now with the man of the week, Dave Grohl, and Foo Fighters. This is Stacked Actors.
Design. You look so messy when you dress up in green.